Welcome to KUOW Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this extra episode, last year, thousands of people hit the streets of Seattle and the nation to march for all things scientific. Respect for the scientific method, evidence-based government policies, public funding for research, and increased support for STEM education. This year, the crowds fell dramatically, but those who attended the Seattle March for Science 2018 were dedicated and outspoken. Pre-march speeches took place at Cal Anderson Park on a chilly, rainy Saturday, April 14th. The focus this year was on underrepresented voices from the scientific community, but included elected representatives in the form of Pramila Jayapal and Nancy Pelosi. Here, MC Bridget Stadler introduces the speeches.
All right, who's ready to start the rally? Who's excited for science? All right. Our first speaker is Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal. Yeah. Pramila Jayapal is the first Indian American woman in the U.S. House of Representatives. She is committed to ensuring that every resident of the district has economic opportunity, fairness and equity, and safe and healthy communities. She is proud of the district's role in leading the country on issues like the minimum wage, racial equity and innovation, and will work to support that work and lift up as a model for the rest of the country. Her focus is on ensuring income equality, access to education, expanding Social Security and Medicare, protecting our environment for the next generation, and ensuring immigrant, civil, and human rights for all. Please welcome Congresswoman Jayapal.
Hello, Seattle. Good morning. Now, some people might say, oh, it's raining and we don't have as big crowds, but we in Seattle say, rain is good for our planet. It is so great to be with you today, and I want to say thank you so much to all the organizers for putting this together, to all of you for braving the weather and coming out, and to say that I am so proud to represent a community that is at the forefront of science, innovation, climate protection, and making sure that we have climate justice as we move forward. So thank you, Seattle, for that. We have in the 7th Congressional District thousands of researchers and students at our universities and colleges, our cancer research centers in South Lake Union, our oceanographers on the shores of the Puget Sound, our biomedical laboratories that are finding new cures. We truly are on the cutting edge. From human genome research to changing the world to defibrillators, to the cardiac lab at the cardiac center at the UW, which is actually pioneering transcatheter aortic valve replacement procedures, to the tests for breast cancer that were created right here in Seattle. Seattle is on the forefront. And I am here because I firmly believe that science is the vehicle towards wisdom. It helps us move forward on our collective welfare. It isn't just something that's out there and research is good. No, science is what actually allows us to all be better off. And so it's about our human health. It's about our clean air. It's about our clean water. It's about cures for illness. It's about human health and healing. And so we're going to continue to advance that no matter what here in the 7th District. But I won't lie to you. This is a grim time for science in our country, and it's not just Donald Trump and his cabinet. It is all the Republicans that are continuing to move forward that agenda, who are not speaking out, and in fact doing everything they can to implement an agenda that benefits only the largest corporations and the wealthiest, like they did with their tax cut, the GOP tax scam, and it's at the cost of our planet and our children. And I know that there are organizers out here like Jamie Margolin that's organizing the march for young people and climate change, because this is their future. And so we are going to fight back against the lies that they're telling. Let's start with climate change. The president and many in the Republican Party say that it's a hoax. Trump withdrew our country from the Paris Climate Accords. The Department of Interior removed climate change from its strategic plan. They revoked President Obama's Clean Power Plan, exposing our cities to millions stronger air pollution and threatening over 20 million people who suffer from asthma. And just this month, they revoked President Obama's stronger vehicle emission standard. And there is no words for that other than they are living in a different reality. The Paris Accords are meant to stop global temperatures from rising more than 2 degrees Celsius, but to get anywhere near that goal, we have to start working on that right now. And let's talk about the EPA just for a minute, because I've always believed we should call the EPA the Agency for Clean Health, Clean Water, and Human Health. That is really what it is. That's what is protecting it. It's the work of the agency that affects every single thing that allows us to live healthy lives. And that's why my Democratic colleagues and I have signed a letter saying that it's way past time to boot Pruitt. Scott Pruitt is a corrupt, greedy, egomaniacal cabinet secretary who's causing incredible damage just because he wants to benefit his industry lobby friends. But there are specific things that he's done, too many to call out, but let me just name a few. He's green-lighted the pesticide that the EPA had previously found to cause neurological harm to our babies. Why? To benefit Dow Chemical. He has overturned Obama-era regulations that required mining companies to provide remediation and clean up the communities that they ravage. Who benefits? The mining companies that would have had to pay about $7.1 billion for that remediation. And just yesterday, the Republican Senate confirmed a man who used to be the lobbyist for the biggest coal mining company as the number two person at the EPA. And it's not just enough for the Republicans to undermine regulations. They're attacking the very scientific process that's at the core of science. So just last month, Polluting Pruitt decided that he alone would decide what is and isn't acceptable science for the EPA to use when developing policies that affect your health and environment. Literally, he said that he would no longer allow the agency to use studies that include non-public scientific data to develop rules. Well, so much of making that connection between air pollution and what causes air pollution is because we use the data of millions of people that don't want that to be public. And he's now said that unless that's all made public, he won't rely on that information. And let's be clear that while the Republican agenda includes undermining real science, it also includes using fake science to enact their broader agenda. So, for example, the Trump administration got rid of the Affordable Care Act's mandate to make sure that birth control is covered by insurance, and they claim that access actually harms women's health more than it hurts, relying on ridiculous studies that actually don't show that at all. So, the reality is, we know that research is absolutely essential to public health, and that's why we Democrats are insisting that we use that research to really show that gun violence, what we've always known, gun violence is a public health issue. That's why we need to make sure we use that research and we enact a ban on assault rifles, a ban on high-capacity magazines, and that we follow the lead of the Parkland students around the country. And we have to make sure that we challenge Ryan Zinke as he slashes our public lands and privatizes our national monuments. Let's be really clear that that GOP tax scam that you've heard me talk about over and over again, and today there's a tax march this afternoon, that scam also included a an opening up of the drilling in the Arctic Refuge, which is sacred to indigenous people and species. And our coastal plains are being sold off to oil companies to be drilled and fracked. So is everyone completely depressed by all of that that's happening? Okay, it's really clear that we are out here because we are a minority party and we do have to be an opposition party. But it is also clear that as vigorous as our opposition is, we have to be a proposition party. And we have to actually propose the vision of what we believe in. And so that's why I, along with my Democratic colleagues and Senator Merkley in the Senate, have introduced the 100 by 50 bill, 100% renewable energy by 2050. Let's keep our fossil fuels in the ground. And that's why, along with my colleagues Don McEachin and Nanette Berrigan, we started a new United for Climate Justice task force. And that's why we've introduced the College for All bill in the House, so we can make sure that our students can actually go and get affordable college. And that's why we have a South Asian Heart Health Awareness Act to actually address cardiac issues within the South Asian community. And that's why we're making sure, and you're gonna meet one of our real champions of every single one of these issues in just a minute. That's why we're making sure we have equal pay for equal work, and that women get paid for their work in science, and that we encourage that. And that's why we're fighting for immigration reform, because guess what? Some of our greatest scientists in this country were immigrants who came here and contributed those skills to who we are. And so I want to take just 1 minute before I get to my introduction of my very, very special guest and a champion for the United States and for progressive values. I want to take a minute to say that while we hear a lot about white male scientists, how many of you know about Mamie Phillips Clark, the first black woman to earn a doctoral degree from Columbia University, whose work on psychological research into racial biases was vital to the Supreme Court's Brown v. Board of Education decision? How many of you recognize every day the work of Katherine Johnson, one of the human computers at NASA, who was featured in Hidden Figures? Or Jane Cook Wright, a black woman who was one of the first doctors to work with cancer-fighting compounds that led to the current treatment for breast and skin cancers? These are important figures. As a proud immigrant myself who came here at 16 with nothing in my pocket, to now be the first Indian American woman in the US House of Representatives is a responsibility to make sure that just as I had shoulders to stand on, that we are creating those ladders for every girl and boy, every brown, black, and white kid in this country, every person who is struggling out of poverty or in the middle class, to be able to be anything they want to be in this country. That is critically important to our science. And so now, it is truly an honor to introduce to you a woman who is a shero. She was the first woman to ever be Speaker of the U.S. House. She has been a champion for science and research and education long before it was politically fashionable, and she left an indelible mark on the budgets that Congress passed that contained unprecedented increases for science. And just last year, she negotiated the deal that lifted the spending caps that actually allowed for us to increase science spending research at the NIH and the CDC. And she has been a champion for women and those who need to be represented most. She is a proud mom, a proud grandmother, a crusader for our planet, and for our future, and it is a true honor to serve with her in the United States House of Representatives. Please give a warm Seattle welcome to Leader Nancy Pelosi.
Good morning, Seattle. Let us all join together and recognize the extraordinary leadership and the magnificent statement of values of your Congresswoman, Pamela Jayapal. She has been as you can see from her litany of concerns, and they're all connected, they're about respect for people, for the environment, and the rest, that she has an impatience about her that is going to fight to shorten the distance between what we know is inevitable and what they think is inconceivable. Let us salute that impatience, that brilliance of Pramila Jayapal. Thank you. It's my honor to be with you this morning. I thank you for having the courage and the stamina to be out on this rainy morning, and want you to know how important your presence is, and the presence of many people across the country. Because internally, we can fight these fights inside maneuvering, but without the outside mobilization, we cannot succeed to the extent that we must for our children. Now, isn't that what this is all about? Science is about the future. When people ask me what are the challenges facing the Congress, the most important issues facing the Congress, I always say the same thing. Our children, our children, our children, our children. And what is the answer? What is the answer to a better future for our children, our children, our children, our children? Science, 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 and science. Science to clean the air they breathe, the water they drink. Science to invest in their education and the well-being, economic well-being of their families. Science to have them be in a world at peace where they can thrive and reach their fulfillment. Science in every way to make the future better. Now, we have some concerns about where certain people in Washington, D.C. are on science. It seems ironic to me that in the Science and Technology Committee, on the wall in that committee, my friends, is this sign. It's a quote from Tennyson. For Tennyson. Tennyson's one of my favorite poets, and I do believe that the arts are a place where we can share our enthusiasm for ideas. And here's what he said. Here's what Tennyson said. Now, this is on the wall of the Science and Technology Committee. For I dipped into the future, far as human eye could see, saw the vision of the world and all the wonder that would be. Science. And yet, in the committee, the majority leadership in the committee is unscience. They're in denial about climate. They're in denial about the impact of policies on our children, their brains, and their future. They're in denial about what the possibilities are. They're even in denial in the value of education and saying that public education teaches critical thinking. And we can't have that. Can you believe that the problem is that fundamental with some in the Congress? But we hope to return this to a time when science is bipartisan, that we have budgets that invest in science for the future. And I am hopeful that that will happen. But it cannot happen without you. I always quote Lincoln. Lincoln said, public sentiment is everything. With it, you can accomplish almost anything. Without it, practically nothing. But in order for public sentiment to prevail, the public must know what is at stake. And your mobilization, your marching, with every step you take, it's about cleaner air, fresher water, good, clean, safe food for our children. It's about keeping America number one in terms of our investments in science and technology and the rest. It's about keeping the world at peace by scientifically understanding what other possibilities are and, if necessary, to have the strength to protect and defend not only our freedom, but freedom throughout the world. So, and this is, some people in Congress have said, you have to choose between science and religion. We don't think you have to do that. We think that science is an answer to our prayers. We think science is an answer to our prayers. So we don't have to choose between faith and science. And what's so special about today is so many children will be participating. How is it that kindergarten children have more wisdom about the world than some policymakers in Washington, D.C.? I like to tell the story about a little boy in first grade. The teacher says to him, what is one and one? He says, two. What is two and two? Four. Teacher says, good. He says, not good, perfect. Perfect. And that's what this wisdom is about. We cannot make decisions unless we know the truth and we know the facts and we agree to a basis of fact. So that's what this science march is about. It's not just about investment in science, as important as that is and as primary our focus of it should be. It's about stipulation to fact, to truth, to knowledge, to science, so that we're making decisions that are a stipulation of fact and not opinion. And so we're at a place where we have an EPA, supposed to be Environmental Protection Agency. As the Congresswoman so brilliantly said, it should be called health and the rest. Maybe we can rename it in 28 weeks. But nonetheless, right now, instead of Environmental Protection Agency, it is the Enabling Pollution Agency. You have corruption and conflict of interest, which is endangering the air our children breathe, the water they drink. I agree with the Congresswoman. Scott Pruitt must go. Scott Pruitt must go. They bury the facts. They warp the science. They're in denial. A Chinese hoax is climate challenge. So, we cannot stand by while this administration silences science. We cannot stand by. And may I just say this, because I want to associate myself with all of the remarks of Congresswoman Jayapal. In the interest of time, I won't reiterate some of those priorities, except to salute her for her leadership in those regards. But I will also add that one of the most important things we can do to protect our children's health, the air they breathe, the water they drink, the food they eat, the prospects for the future, is to reduce the role of money in politics. The connection between the corruption and conflict of interest in this administration and their decisions and their appointments is very direct. There is a direct relationship between money and politics. The big money that is being put in to protect the fossil fuel industry, the big money that is being put in to diminish the role of science in our country. Now let's talk about science in one other respect. It is a job creator. It is a job creator. Whatever you want to talk about, whether you want to talk about basic biomedical research, you have a scientist. But you also have a carpenter, a plumber, an electrician. You have jobs created throughout our economy. So whether it's about faith, if you believe, as do I, that this is God's creation, and some of the evangelicals join us in saying, because it is God's creation, we must be good stewards of it. We must be good stewards. But even if you do not share that religious belief, you all agree that we have a moral responsibility to our children to preserve the planet and pass it on in a better way, in a better way. So understanding our responsibilities, all of us, I just want to salute all of you for turning out. I want to recognize my former colleague, Rush Holt, who's now the head of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, who's participating in Washington, D.C. as we assemble here. When he was in Congress, he was a relentless champion for investments in scientific research. On the outside, now he's doing that. So inside and outside. Inside maneuvering, outside mobilization for science. God's gift to all of us. So let's just remember, if we had four things that we wanted to do to make the world a better place for our children, it would be, join me, science, 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 and science. Thank you, Seattle, for your commitment to science. Thank you. And thank you for sending Congresswoman Jayapal to the Congress of the United States.
All right, thank you, Congresswoman Jayapal and Leader Pelosi. The march organizers would now like to take a moment to acknowledge that our nation's land was first owned by its first inhabitants, and many of these indigenous cultures were stripped of their land and the resources within it. This includes the land we stand on today. Zero Hour is a nationwide youth climate movement that was founded by our next speaker, Jamie Margolin. She's a high school sophomore and activist, and she is helping to organize Zero Hour's Youth Climate Lobby Day and March in Washington, D.C. on July 21st. She is not afraid to stand up for what she believes in, be it climate denial, the end of gun violence, or racism. Please welcome Jamie Margolin.
Hola, ¿cómo están? Hi everyone, my name is Jamie Margolin and I'm 16 years old. Hopefully I have my whole life ahead of me. There's so much I want to do. I want to travel the world. I want to see Yellowstone, the Northern Lights, the Amazon rainforest, coral reefs, and all of the world's natural wonders. I want to earn enough money to help out my family in Colombia. I want to serve in political office so that someday I can be a leader who actually puts the people I'm serving before special interests. But I have to come to terms with the fact that all of this very well may not happen, because I'm a 16-year-old girl growing up in the 21st century. I was born a few short months after 9/11. Not only has extensive airport security always been a reality for me, so is the fact that my world and all of its life systems are unraveling and falling apart. Climate change has loomed over every life decision, every time I try to plan for the future. There's never been a time in my life where the scientific consensus was not that humans are causing our own extinction. My life and that of my entire generation is full of ifs. I want to travel the world. If the countries I want to visit are not ravaged by water wars and conflict over dwindling resources, I want to see the world's natural wonders, if those natural wonders will still be around by the time I'm an adult. I want to earn enough money to help out my family in Colombia, if they are still healthy in spite of all the fracking for natural gas and water contamination happening around their homes. I want to serve in political office if our democracy will still be intact. Because when climate-caused natural disasters, food shortages, and epidemics ravage our country, tyrants could take advantage of the crisis situation and strip away our rights. My leaders are giving my generation an unlivable planet, but we aren't just gonna sit here and take it lying down. Enough is enough of the fossil fuel and animal agriculture industries controlling our politician and poisoning the future for all young people. Students are standing up. I am a community organizer. I started my activism career when I was 14. I'm a plaintiff on the Youth Versus Government lawsuit, suing the Washington state government over continuing to make climate change worse and denying my generation's rights to a livable climate. Last summer, I founded a youth organization called Zero Hour. We're called Zero Hour because this is Zero Hour to act on climate change. There is no more time to wait. We are students from across the country, working with each other over the internet, like the Generation Z kids that we are, to organize the Youth Climate March and the Youth Climate Lobby Day this summer. On July 19th, youth will flood Capitol Hill to lobby our leaders for urgent climate action and demand that they stop taking money from fossil fuels. And don't throw away your signs, people, because on July 21st, mark your calendars, a few short days after we lobby, students will march for a livable future. Mark your calendars for the Youth Climate Action Weekend this summer and tell your friends. Okay, I have a little action for you. If you support the youth movement, I want you to get out your phones. That's right, a technology lesson from a teenager. Get out your phones and go to Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, whichever social media platform you use the most, or all of them, and type in at this is 0 hour. No spaces, just this is 0 hour. A logo with an orange earth should pop up, and I want you to like that and follow that. And when you get home, share and retweet and repost and spread the word that young people are not going to sit down and take this injustice. We've had enough. We're sick of it. There is no more time to pretend that we can solve climate change later. It should have been done 30 years ago. There is no more time to pretend that frontline communities like indigenous communities, low-income communities, and communities of color aren't already experiencing the effects of climate change, because they are. Climate change is already here, and if you haven't felt the effects yet, you can thank your privilege, but it's here. This is 0 hour to act on climate change. Are you with me? Are you with the youth? Are you ready to demand that it's 0 hour to act? When I say what time is it, you say 0 hour. What time is it?
0 hour.
What time is it?
0 hour.
What time is it?
0 hour.
What time is it?
0 hour.
Thank you, Seattle.
Thank you, Jamie. I hope everyone here will do what they can to support 0 hour on July 21st. Don't forget to like their social media accounts. Our next speaker is a marine ecologist with a PhD in biological oceanography from Scripps Institution of Oceanography and is a member of the Samish Indian Nation. Dr. Marco Hatch has created a wonderfully diverse lab at Western Washington University and has worked to prepare the next generation of environmental scientists and leaders through fostering respect for indigenous knowledge and providing scientists with a solid background in scientific methods. Please welcome Dr. Marco Hatch.
OCM Nachalcha CM, Sinisnat, Marco Hatch. Good morning, dear friends and relatives. My name is Marco Hatch. I'm a member of the Samish Indian Nation and assistant professor at Western Washington University in environmental science. And thank you so much for spending your day with us today on March for Science 2018. Yeah. Today I'm speaking on behalf of an organization dedicated to achieving true diversity in the STEM field called SACNAS. And joining me on stage are a few of the rising superstars in science from our Western Washington University SACNAS chapter. Please join me in giving a round of applause. SACNAS is leading the national movement to build a critical mass of STEM leaders from underrepresented communities. Our SACNAS community is 26,000 individuals strong, made up of students and scientists dedicated to creating a new STEM environment. A new STEM environment where minority students do not have to leave their cultures at the lab door. Rather, we believe that diverse scientists merge and integrate their diverse identities, creating a new science space that brings these cultures and ways of knowing together to help create a sustainable future for us all. In my lab at Western Washington University, a quick shout out to the Coastal Communities and Ecology Lab. We believe science, not silence. The voices of indigenous people, the original inhabitants and caretakers of this land, are often silenced in favor of those with advanced degrees in the scientific fields. Our system favors the voice of PhDs over individuals with multiple generations of firsthand experience of the environment. Rather than silencing this complete knowledge system, indigenous knowledge, we need to find ways to uphold multiple ways of knowing to create a more sustainable future for all people. I'd like to exemplify this by telling you a short story about respecting multiple ways of knowing. This story originates from Chief Dan George and is referred to as the One Canoe, Two Trees story. Long ago, when a family needed a new canoe, they would meet with our community carver, and they would discuss the purpose of that canoe. Was it for short trips or long trips? Was it to visit friends and family? Was it to move through the islands? And after learning what they needed, the carver would go into the woods and look for the perfect cedar tree. Once he found that cedar tree, he wouldn't simply cut it down. Through a process, he would ask the tree for permission, he would talk to the tree, and he would pray. This might take multiple days, and during that time, he would tell the tree about the family and how as a canoe, it would help provide for them and help them visit their family. And if the tree agreed, it would be cut down and have a new life as a canoe. But today, we no longer have those big cedar trees that we can build one canoe from. Today, to build a canoe, we need to use two cedar trees. And when making a canoe from two trees, it's important that they meld together. It's important that they don't give up their identity as separate trees, but they see each other as equals, that one tree doesn't think it's better than the other tree, that one tree doesn't think that its way of doing things is the only way to do things. If one tree holds that value, if one tree thinks it's better than the other, it'll cause tension in the canoe. And tension causes cracks, which will eventually lead that canoe to fall apart, and all of the inhabitants, everybody in that canoe, will sink. You could think of that canoe as the Salish Sea, and you could think of all of us as the passengers in the Salish Sea. That if we want, that we can think of these two trees as the balance between Western and indigenous science, that we need to have an equitable relationship, that indigenous science holds thousands of years worth of intergenerational knowledge and has a sophisticated system to protect that knowledge, build that knowledge, and maintain that knowledge. And for our own survival, we need to bring together Western science and indigenous science in a respectful way. That if we want to continue to explore and enjoy the Salish Sea together, we need to make sure that our canoe stays together. So today, I'm marching for a more inclusive STEM community that acknowledges all communities and their knowledge. Haishka.
Let's hear it for Dr. Hatch. Next, we have proof that anyone can work to make a positive difference, no matter their age. These young women have an important problem they want to bring to your attention. Geneva Betnell learned about the issue of plastic straws when her older brother started studying plastic pollution in the ocean. Geneva and her friends petitioned their city council in Redmond and Shoreline to ban plastic straws. The city councils considered the ban but decided not to go ahead with it just yet. To encourage them to pay more attention to the issue, she went to their weekly council meeting to challenge the members to personally give up using plastic straws for the month of April. To make an even bigger challenge, she wants everyone to join in. Please welcome to the stage Geneva Betnell, Megan O'Reilly, Becky Hinckley, Kaylee Peterson, and Eleanor Vallis.
This is Geneva Betnell, Becky Hinckley, Kylie Peterson, and Eleanor Vallis. We have spoken to the Shoreline City Council, the Redmond City Council, and Governor Jay Inslee about banning disposable plastic straws and encouraging legislators as well as all of you at the rally to do the same. Seattle will start a ban on single-use plastic straws this July. We are leading the nation in this and now it's time for all communities to begin the process of helping the Earth. Go home to your own neighborhoods and cities and spread the word that you want a complete ban on plastic straws.
Plastic straws are bad for the environment. Researchers have found that in the U.S. alone, people discard more than 500 million straws every day, or more than 180 billion a year. That's about 1.4 million kilograms of plastic sent into the oceans every day. Recently in Spain, a sperm whale was found on a beach with 64 pounds of plastic and waste in its stomach. Also, plastic never fully biodegrades, but only breaks down to smaller and smaller pieces until it gets into everything.
Some businesses that already use plant-based straws are Whole Foods, Taco Time, Pagliacci Pizza, and homegrown restaurants. Tell restaurants like Starbucks about corn straws, compostable straws made out of corn, other types of compostable straws so that they can use those instead of plastic ones. Not only there are corn straws, but there are other biodegradable options as well as steel straws, bamboo straws, or you can choose no straw at all.
Unless we make real changes, then by the year 2050, United Nations Environment Program predicts that there will be more plastic in the oceans than there are fish. Tell more people about this movement. If you have pen pals from around the United States or around the world, ask them to join you. Talk to your school or work cafeteria to get them to use different kinds of straws. U.S. children and other children will be around much longer than today's adults and would like to see a beautiful world, even more beautiful than it is today. That is why we want to ban plastic straws.
Plastic straws are killing animals. If this keeps happening, everything will die. We challenge you to not use plastic straws for 1 month. Raise your hand if you accept our challenge.
You say thank you. Say thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If every person was as engaged as those citizens, our world would be a much better place. Let's give it up for them one more time. But not every child has the opportunity, the support, and the role models to encourage them to follow their hearts. Our next speaker is working to change that for girls in computer science. Adriana Germano is a third-year PhD student in social psychology at the University of Washington. A major aim of her research is to reduce social group inequality using data-driven psychological interventions. She now works to increase the inclusion of women in STEM and investigate the effectiveness of popular diversity initiatives used by schools and other organizations. She hopes that her research will encourage young students with non-traditional and underrepresented backgrounds to see that they too can have careers in science. Please welcome Adriana Germano.
Hi. Okay, so I never grew up thinking that I was going to be a scientist. I dreamt of being an FBI agent solving mysteries like Dana Scully in The X-Files, or of an English teacher like my mom. And even when I got good grades in science classes, or when I won the fifth grade science fair, I still didn't imagine being a scientist. And the truth is that this experience is not uncommon for most girls. Women are heavily underrepresented in the field of science. In computer science, women represent just 18% of all computer science degrees earned in our nation. As a scientist, I find these numbers troubling. When women's voices aren't included in scientific discussions, we all lose. For years, heart disease research was conducted just with men. leading to an underdiagnosis of heart disease in women. In tech, the absence of women of color led to facial recognition software that couldn't recognize black men and women's faces. Big problems like these point to areas in science where women can strengthen and enrich scientific fields just by their inclusion. Part of my job as a social psychologist is to uncover the social and psychological factors that contribute to why women are left out of science. In research conducted with my advisor, Sapna Charyan, we've investigated how feelings of belonging or fitting in can influence whether women enter computer science. Our lab has found that feeling like you belong is key for women's success in science. Research from our lab shows that how a computer science classroom even looks can influence women's interests in feeling and belonging in the field. In a study, we switched out items in a classroom to make it both inviting for women and men. So we changed Star Trek posters for nature posters, and we changed energy drinks for water bottles. And we found that making these small changes and easy changes to classrooms increased women's interest in computer science, all because they felt like that classroom looked like a place that they could belong. Our lab has also done work to understand how belonging influences which computer science classes women sign up for, and how belonging can influence what sort of awards even women apply for. And I think the thing that I'm most excited about, though, is how our computer science interventions can possibly change this. In these interventions, we hope to target the barriers facing women in computer science. We've observed that even when women perform well in computer science classes, they're not continuing on to major in computer science. And so we think that belonging might be one of these reasons why. So using data-driven methods, we're currently developing new interventions to increase women's belonging in computer science classes. And a goal of these interventions is to highlight that making small changes to computer science can have a large impact for women. Because what's good for women and what's good for computer science shouldn't be thought of as two separate goals. They're the same. And I think that this message is really central to why we're all here today. It's important that we continue to fund research on diversity and inclusion, not just for the advancement of underrepresented groups, but for the advancement of the field of science. And I feel especially lucky to be researching these issues at the University of Washington, where research on diversity and inclusion is thriving. And without public funding, we wouldn't be able to investigate these issues to create real social change. And I'd like to end where I began, that while I didn't grow up with the dream of being a scientist, I'd like my research to change this for young people today. Everyone should get to have the dream of being a scientist. Thank you.
Everybody say hi to my baby. Most importantly, say thank you to Adriana for working to improve science by finding practical and effective ways to bring underrepresented voices into STEM. Our next speaker brings a strong understanding of how critical it is when looking for solutions to environmental dilemmas that confront us, to embrace, respect, and apply the deep and long-standing relationships that Indigenous peoples have with the environment. TJ Green is a former chairman and chief of police of the Macaw tribe and is currently trustee for the Washington State chapter of the Nature Conservancy. Please welcome TJ.
All right, good morning, Seattle. It's great to be here on this beautiful Pacific Northwest spring day. Hey, I want to give a shout out. I just seen this when I got here. This is pretty awesome for me personally. But standing in the back, we have the Alliance and the Empire and a freelance bounty hunter all standing together as one in the back. And that goes right along with the message I'll be delivering today. So we're here for the March for Science 2018, and I have a couple things I want to do before I get into the heart of the message that I want to deliver today. The first one is I want to say a prayer in my traditional tongue, and I'm going to do that for you right now, okay? You don't need to do anything special, just open your hearts and listen. And the words of this prayer, what they talk about is leading us down the righteous path together as one, that we be of the same mind and of the same spirit. I'll do that for you now. Dau kwa chakachke. Dau kwa chakachke. Iach itiasis tia oklep. Dau kwa chakachke. Slibak te e. Dutch chia. Chibate, chibate. Kliko. Shoo. Thank you for that. The next thing I want to share is it's from the poetry works of William Wordsworth. And it's just an excerpt from The Tables Are Turned. And what it says is, come forth into the light of things and let nature be your teacher. And so once again, my name's TJ Green. I'm the former chairman for the Macaw Tribe and currently a trustee for the Nature Conservancy. And today we are together for science. We must stand as one and support the continued understanding of our natural world and our impacts to the environment through research, analysis, and reporting. We must acknowledge the significance of science-based discoveries on our lives, and that's been talked about a lot today, and I fully agree with that. We must also recognize silenced voices, which lends to why I stand before you today. It's time to converge science with indigenous knowledge. Indigenous knowledge, or as some call it, traditional ecological knowledge, complements science and vice versa. They can be one and the same. It's critical to develop this partnership, and in doing so, we can advance policy based on facts, research, knowledge transferred through centuries. Thank you. So I just want to pause right here. I want everyone, let's just take a moment. Look at the world around you. You know, take a look. We're surrounded by a little bit of trees here in the middle of the city. Okay, everybody, it's not raining right now, so just take a look up. Take a deep breath. Let it out. You know, we're all on this big blue rock surrounded by gas, and it's tumbling through space. And contained within it is this life-giving climate that we should all hold so dear. And that climate affects everything. It impacts our economy. It impacts our food source, air, land, water. Nothing is untouched by that climate. And our actions impact the climate, the cities we build, the transportation we use, and the technology we create all affect our climate. Indigenous knowledge has long taught that all things are connected. Confirming these connections through science can lead to lasting, strong policy that ensures a healthy climate for the future. Case in point, I'd like to share just a couple stories. We're in the Pacific Northwest, where most of us are from here, I gather today, and a lot of us grew up here. Well, 50 years ago, the knowledge of our traditional leaders, we were fighting for salmon, not just treaty rights. We were fighting for salmon, for the habitat of that salmon, and only now are we getting around to realize that in the mainstream world today. You know, these cities that we built, you know, you look through Seattle, the number of cranes that are all over throughout that city. And that's daunting, but it's also a big opportunity for us to get involved, to do things better than last time. I know a lot of that has taken place as we're designing better buildings. We're trying to design cities that act more like nature and take care of the problems that we have created for ourselves. And so we need to do more of it. We're doing some. We need to be energized, and we need to get more of that done. And one of the other things I wanted to share, you know, for us coastal tribes off the state, halibut is a big resource to us. And 100 years ago, just the Macaw tribe by itself would harvest out of a canoe over 1 million pounds of halibut in one season. Today, you know, we're sharing 300,000 to 400,000 pounds of halibut amongst 13 tribes. That's what's happened to our resource. That type of development, that type of use has to stop. And science can play a big role in making that happen when it's converged with the indigenous knowledge of our ancestors. Science also promotes innovation. Take a look around. Look at the people next to you. Get to know them. Gathered here today are some of the most inspired, creative, intelligent, driven people anywhere. And each of you are important. People are important. Our creative approaches to solve problems creates opportunity to develop climate-healthy processes to live out our daily lives. We must stand up for science locally, regionally, nationally, internationally, and continue to educate our children on the wonders of science and incorporate the sacred teachings of indigenous knowledge into our daily lives. So now I say to all, come forth into the light of things. Let nature be your teacher. The lands and waters upon which all life depends is counting on us. Let's get it done. God bless Seattle. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thanks for streaming this extra episode of Speakers Forum from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. The March for Science 2018 speeches took place at Cal Anderson Park on Saturday, April 14th. Tune in again soon.